I hope people like the sound of me eating these almonds.
Oh, hell yeah. More ASMR.
Yeah.
For the real, real Chapo heads that jerk off to every episode. And you know they're out there. You know they exist.
I tweeted, laughing my ass off, Hillary owns slaves. And Crushing Bort replied, interesting that you critique a woman for having slaves.
Hillary owns slaves. How did no one recognize that during the campaign?
Unbelievable.
Astounding.
I just have this like image of her like coming out of the lawn in the governor's mansion in like giant mirrored sunglasses, like fucking Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
Or like you know, just chewing a piece of straw, you know. Either that or like Strother Martin or whatever. What we have here is a failure to understand America's already great. So man, they don't want to learn. Greetings, friends, and welcome to a special midweek Chapo UK election edition. There's just so much goddamn news happening this week that we had to do another show. Currently, Felix is recording yet another interview about other news that's going on. You are joined by myself, Matt, and Brendan.
Hello!
But sitting in with us is the Chapo official UK correspondent, The Guardian's Jonathan Shannon. Jonathan, how are you?
Cheerio.
You sound excited for election fever.
Yeah, I think
you're absolutely mental.
I think we're ready for it to be over, I think.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it must be so tough for you to go through those, you know, month-long election season in the UK.
It's been draining.
It's really excruciating.
Five exhausting weeks.
Yeah. Okay, so Jonathan, I mean, like, you know, you're super plugged into it. We've been following this election from afar. Just, you know, if you're listening to the show, we're not going to even have any shred of objectivity here. We've been shamelessly rooting for Jez this entire way.
But the just absolute like, boy!
He is the boy.
He is that boy. So, like, just to start things off, so the Tory, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, she called for this snap election, basically, correct me if I'm wrong, as a means to basically once and for all finish off the Labour Party, thinking it would be an absolute rout. And then in the preceding weeks, things have gotten much closer than they would have thought.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, an interesting thing about this is it's hard to remember what it was like before she called the election. Because for a long time, there was this sense that, like, she wasn't going to call an election. The feeling was like, yeah, she knows Corbyn is vulnerable, but she doesn't want to take a chance. And I remember, like, even a lot of my friends, when the election was called, people were really in a bad mood. I mean, there was very much this sense that, like, oh, she's, like, pulled one over on us and, like, she's going to crush Labour. Although, in a weird way, I think one of the things that I'm not super expert on the kind of internal politics of the Conservative Party, but I think for her, it was basically like, this is my chance to steal votes from Labour. But also, I think the idea was she had inherited from David Cameron not a huge majority. I think it's increased slightly, but I used to see people saying she had a majority of 12 and the House of Commons has like 650 something seats in it. So she had a pretty thin majority, and the kind of part of the lore of British politics is that John Major in the 90s after Thatcher was kind of torn down by lots of infighting between the sort of anti-Europe and more pro-Europe people in the party. Because he had a slim majority. The idea being, if you're the prime minister and you have a slim majority, you can be held hostage by like the worst people in your party.
Now that's the Tories, but would you say that dynamic is at least now more in play with Labour, that does seem to have a sort of a divided party?
Well, yeah, no, Labour definitely has a divided party. I mean, it's not even operative with Labour right now because, you know, it's just pure civil war, or has been until recently. I think what I mean to say is that for Theresa May, crushing Labour was like a side benefit of her larger goal.
I see.
Which was to get a crushing majority of her own, so she could tell anybody else in the Tory party, go fuck yourself if you don't like my way of doing it.
And what is, like, how would you describe, like, what is May's platform? Who is her constituency? And, like, you know, like what, like, to an American who's, like, not only knows her as this kind of gargoyle.
Who is, I'm trying to think of who is, like, the best American equivalent. You know, she has, like, a little bit of this sort of, like, George Bush Sr. kind of vibe about her. You know, she sort of has positioned herself as this sort of true representative of Middle England. She's kind of more Thatcher than Thatcher. You know, she's a vicar's daughter. She clearly was kind of underestimated by a lot of men in the Conservative Party for a very long time. And kind
Slay
of,
queen.
Yeah, and after and after coming into office, you know, told people like George Osborne, for example, to go fuck themselves. She's like a Middle England authoritarian.
Okay.
You know, and she doesn't go in, you know, there's this kind of like foppish Boris Johnson high Toryism, and she doesn't go in for that, really. Okay. She's like, she's tough. What used to be her reputation, I guess.
So watching from afar, right, like it seemed like, you know, when she called for this election, it was a done deal. This was it for Corbyn and the like the Corbyn-led Labour Party, because it was assumed that it was going to be a wipeout. Over the last couple weeks, though, the polls have gotten closer and closer and closer, and the ones I've seen all, they're close, but, like, you know, the Tories, they, it looks like they have like a solid 2 to 3 points in most of the polls, but it's a lot closer than people thought it was going to be. What did Corbyn do? Or did, I mean, like how were you surprised by this? Like, how is, like, what has happened to make this as close a race as it's become?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody was surprised by it a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, like, you know, I was saying before, the day that she called the election, a lot of the most kind of pro-Corbyn people I knew were like, oh man, we're fucked. You know, this is really bad. I think a couple of things have happened. The most optimistic view of things is that Labour have run a really good campaign. You know, we can come to Corbyn in a second, but Corbyn is, you know, a normal human being. And has a kind of, you know, a charm about him in a sort of old fashioned way that people are into, or some people are into. I think the other kind of the most, what I was going to say, the most optimistic thing I think is that, you know, Labour has really done what a lot of people on the left have wanted it to do for a long time, which is to offer up a real straightforward social democratic manifesto.
I'm sorry you say that, but I'm sorry, columnist Nigel Chris Bollocks here. I've supported Labour all of my life, all the way back to the leadership of Lord Gargamel Foreskin. But Jeremy Corbyn, with his refusal to endorse nuclear annihilation or torturing the savage Mau Mau or the use of poison gas against uncivilized Iraqi tribes, has rendered himself unfit to govern. So I shall cast a sad but necessary vote for my local Lib Dem candidate, Reginald Boylove.
Matt is, of course, referring to...
It sounds to me that Matt is in the constituency where Reginald Boylove is running, and I have to confess, he's done fine work for the people of Maidenhead.
One of the interesting things watching this from afar is, as you alluded to, I think people in America, particularly on the left, are very invested in this because, like you said, it does seem like Corbyn is doing for the Labour Party what we desperately want the Democrats to do in this country, which is, like you said, put forth an actual left political agenda. Also, it's interesting to see how the media treats that agenda and treats Jeremy Corbyn as a figure, because, like you said, he seems like has an authenticity, he has a likability to him, but it's insane to me. Like, how would you describe the British press's reaction to the figure and personality of Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, I think, you know, the British press is a funny thing because everyone knows about the tabloids. And I think there's a sense from America that, well, the big thing here is this kind of tabloid journalism. I think what people don't get so much is that, like, I never know how to talk about the British media. It's a bit tricky, obviously, because I'm part of it. But it's kind of like, imagine if there were, like, 10 times as many kind of, like, Chris Salizas. And you kind of have, like, well, because there's a bit of a sense of, like, well, you can't make the tabloids angry. And there's a way in which I think, well, okay, that's perfectly reasonable because, you know, they're pretty powerful and you don't want to make them angry. But I think the sense that Corbyn was unelectable was, to call it conventional wisdom, I think would be to understate things. I think the idea was that Gary Young, my Guardian colleague, wrote a brilliant column about this morning, you know, that this was like science. If you thought that Corbyn could win an election, that was like a sign that nobody should take you seriously. And I think, look, I think it has to be said, thinking about this from a sort of Sanders, if you're trying to compare this to America, it's a bit tricky. It's kind of like the American Democratic primary kind of turn on its head, because on one hand, Corbyn won, whereas Sanders in the end, in the primary at least, lost, even though we all know he would have won the general election. Whereas Corbyn won the equivalent of a Labour primary. And then, as you guys, I'm sure, know, there was a challenge and there was a vote of no confidence in him. And then they put it out
again.
Yeah,
wasn't there some, like, vague flesh form in a suit who tried to unseat him? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Owen Smith. Owen Smith.
That's it, yes.
Who went around, like, a thumb. Who went around saying things like, I had to fight off 50 blokes to shag my bird. God,
we can all agree that if he were running, they'd be 20 points up on Theresa May. There's no question about it.
Saying I like a normal beer. I'm a normal beer drinker. So Corbyn won. I think it's safe to say that I'm to the left of the British public. But even I'm a bit surprised, I think, by how well Corbyn is doing at the moment. I mean, I think you definitely find people. Who are quite sympathetic to his policies, who are like, oh, wow, this is really better than I expected. An interesting thing that people have said is that it's not just what happens when you actually present left policies to the public. Part of the idea that I've seen people put forth, which I think is an interesting one and maybe applies a bit to the Bernie versus Hillary case too, is that when you're having an election, you get to speak directly to the public in a way that's maybe not super easy to do during normal periods of time when things are much more kind of mediated by journalists. So I think that's part of it. And then, of course, the big, big thing is that the two big pieces of journalistic or kind of establishment conventional wisdom were Corbyn is shit, but also May had this reputation as being this kind of consummate professional. You know, people, you know, the cliche stock phrase is like safe pair of hands, you know, and she's just like, you know, shit the place.
Haven't they, like, put her in like a broom closet for the last week of the campaign? Like, they're not letting her in public at all.
Oh, man. I mean, it's just like every time she gives an interview, it's like absolutely cringeworthy. She I was looking this up before. There's like, people have been posting these kind of Q&As that she does where people try and people ask her, you know, she'll like go to like a local newspaper and they'll ask her these like innocuous questions, right? And they'll be like, chocolate or vanilla? And she will say, like, you know, I think you'll find my record on ice cream has always been consistent.
Now, Jonathan, on that tip of Corbyn's surprise surge and, you know, with some help from the Tories being
shit. They're bloody shit, man.
Basically shitting the bed for, you know, 3 weeks straight. A lot of our lefty friends in America are obviously watching with great anticipation. And friend of the show, Matt Brunig, for example, you know, has been posting polls that show the gap tightening and all that stuff. And it's all very exciting. But there's some idiosyncrasies with the British system that maybe I don't want to go into a civics lesson, but if you could spell out some stuff, because I'm pretty rusty on it. I remember that it's something like, in addition to people, you know, voting in the polls, all the MPs go to a Tesco's and top up their mobiles. The provider they select corresponds to a candidate.
Well, I think you're discarding that then there's a fight among the supporters of various football clubs.
Uh-huh.
No, it's basically, you know, it's like it's a bit like the Electoral College, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, it's like the House of Representatives. You know, it's first past the post in each place. So it's, I think like your Nate Silvers would say that it's like a particularly difficult place to predict because nobody has the money to, you can't, you know, it's easy enough. You're like, in America, you can do the Nate Silver shit because it's easy enough to compile polls of 50 different states.
Right.
But no public body is like newspaper is commissioning polls of 650 different, you know,
right,
house districts or whatever.
Right.
I think, look, the thing right now is basically like, if you know, maybe this will sound ridiculous by whenever this airs, I think it's unlikely that Corbyn will win in terms of getting more seats than May.
Yeah.
I think, however, if she doesn't get an outright majority, or if she reduces, if she doesn't get an outright majority, then it goes to a hung parliament, who knows what happens. For her purposes, and I think for the purposes of kind of left politics in a long-term way, if she loses seats or doesn't gain seats, that's a real victory for the left.
It's
and a humiliation for the
Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Yeah. It'll finally happen.
But it basically, at the moment, maybe this is, you know, reminiscent a bit of some American polling last year. It basically, the disparity in the various polls seem to come down to how many young people will vote.
Right, because, that's what's so maddening, seeing people try to draw conclusions. It's like, well, you know, we can only really weigh these things based on past elections, and that tells us there's going to be X youth turnout. But the whole premise, the entire premise of the electoral left now in the post-Trump Brexit era is you give people genuine, robust social democratic vision, and that makes them come and vote, and that energizes the non-voters, and young people make up a huge chunk of non-voters. And this is really the first test of that thesis that we've had, sort of a pure test of the thesis of that.
Yeah, I think Matt is right on that, because I was looking at a chart today where you can see that the young people's vote went down from 2010 to 2015, which were the last two general elections. So the 2015 general election, which was Ed Miliband versus David Cameron, young people's vote fell to like the lowest level
ever. I can't imagine why they didn't want to come out and vote between those two absolute plonkers.
Exactly. But then the young people's vote, even though the young people's vote went up higher than 2010 for the 2016 Brexit referendum. So I think the question here is going to be, which one of these does this look more like, you know?
Yeah.
And you're seeing some, it's hard to read the tea leaves at this point. You're seeing some signs of young people saying, you know, wait, we got fucked by the old people at Brexit, so we're like definitely going to vote. You're seeing other signs of, you know, well, no, it's, you know, it kind of depends on which surveys you're looking at. But I think the big conversation in the past couple of days, in London at least, has been how many young people are going to come out to vote.
And that's why if there's any kind of Tory, even if they don't lose any seats, if they draw to a draw, which would be bad for May and might even cost her the premiership, honestly, if she doesn't get any seats, it's still going to make me very depressed, and I'm going to start drinking even more heavily than I am right now. I'll just say that right now.
I think, look, it's a tough thing because I think I was thinking about this before we got on the phone. I think there is one way in which you can see what's happening right now as a kind of vindication of left politics, no matter what, you know, in that it was like this was someone who people thought has no, absolutely no chance, is a joke, is a laughing stock. And yet, here we are, it's 2 days away, you know, still anything is possible. On the other hand, you can be sure that if he loses, there will be an immediate backlash and there will be a campaign to say, look, we let the left have a go and you fucked it up, and so, you know, get back in your cage.
Yeah, we need Lord Neville Wogshoot to take over.
Jonathan, now, like, so this dynamic's been going on of, like, you know, Corbyn has outperformed everyone who thought he was a joke. May has been very studiously dodging him in all of these debates. She hasn't gone. She's been putting all these sort of like pinch hitters in for her at all these debates. That woman, Amber Rudd, who I found out was the, quote, aristocracy coordinator for the film Four Weddings and a Funeral. So that's been going on.
A great thing there is that British people find that less remarkable than you guys.
I know. But this is for an American audience. Now, the other thing that, like, we have to talk about that is, you know, in the background of this election, over the last week in England, has seen now two, like, terrorist atrocities happen. First at the bombing at the concert in Manchester, and then just the other day, the attack on London Bridge. I mean, it's hard. I mean, like, this, again, it's really hard for me to imagine how insane that would be, like, if we had a terrorist, even one terrorist attack before a U.S. election. But what I've been amazed at is how, like, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, like, how has this affected or not affected the election? I've been really impressed with how Corbyn has basically not done the typical, like, the thing you'd expect, for instance, a Democratic politician to do, which is instantly cow to this national security war on terrorism bullshit, but to go straight ahead with his message and have it basically be received as such.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. I think you're right. It has affected the narrative of the race less than you would expect, certainly by comparison to America, or by comparison to what you would expect in America. I think the Manchester, the period of time during which these two attacks occurred, to me, coincided with a shift in the Tory strategy. So the strategy, I think, that the Conservative Party brought into this election and that Theresa May brought into this election was to say, I'm the only person who you can trust to negotiate Brexit. Which, as my friend Sam Knight, who writes pieces for me at The Guardian, pointed out, has the accidental impact of suggesting that Brexit is a really fucking bad idea if you can't trust anyone to handle it. So it seemed clear that this strategy wasn't working so much and that they needed to find another way to attack Corbyn. And I think what you saw after Manchester was this idea that, like, okay, let's attack him because, like, you know, he was seen to be too sympathetic to the IRA in the 1980s or whatever nonsense. They have tried to go in this direction. I didn't see it. Boris Johnson gave a speech today saying, you know, he always sides with the enemies of Britain, whatever that means.
But I mean, to give the devil their due, I mean, he was sympathetic to the IRA in the 80s, but
it's very much the idea that I think they tried to act like they didn't see Manchester as an opportunity, but also did see it as an opportunity. And they've done the same thing in London. What has complicated this, as you guys maybe know, is that, first of all, Theresa May was the Home Secretary. It's almost like the, like, head of, like, Homeland Security or something. I don't know. It's weird.
So it's hard
like
for the Tories
America,
to make
really.
A case that they're keeping you safe,
it's
right?
It's the top bobby, mate.
Yeah, who is the American equivalent of this? I'm sure some lanyard will set us all straight when this goes online. But she was the person who was in charge of this for, like, the last 6 years. And one of the things that her and, you know, David Cameron and George Osborne did was to cut a lot of funding for police. So it's a funny thing where Corbyn has been able to kind of, like, get one over on her by pointing out that, like, these cuts have taken place in a lot of police. I mean, it's been a bit weird. It's an odd bedfellows kind of thing going on, because you've seen people in the last day or two on the left on Twitter saying, like, wait, hang on, what's going on here? Why are we, like, we're, like, rallying behind the police? I don't feel good about that, you know. But there's been an opportunity to say to people in a fairly vivid way, look, you were supposed to, you know, you're campaigning as the person who is singularly capable of keeping this country safe, and it looks like you're doing a pretty shit job.
You know, my dream scenario for the way this all ends, I know it won't happen, and I know about abstentionism, don't lecture me, anybody listening to this, but it's my fantasy, it's my mind castle vision. It's the election happens, and Corbyn has a shock upset, but they're going into the Westminster with the new parliament, and he's like 4 votes shy of achieving of the prime ministership. And then they go, "My God, it's Sinn Féin's music!" And the extensionist MPs from Northern Ireland strut into Westminster and put him over the top after all the talk about how he sucked the IRA's dick in the 80s. I know it won't happen. They will not take their seats, but it would be cool.
Matt, in your mind, what's the music? Is it like is it a Pogue song?
Yes, absolutely. No. It's shipping up to Boston.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, it's a funny moment right now because I do think she seems really weak. And I think, you know, look, I think if Corbyn loses, the kind of political, journalistic, whatever establishment, you know, the lanyards, whatever we call them now, will say, "Look, we told you this guy wasn't going to win," and you know.
Well, that's the infuriating thing is that now you see as he's been closing the gap, all the people who've been naysaying him and shitting on him for the last year are now like, "Oh, imagine if they'd been a competent Labour leader, they'd be doing much better." It's like, yeah, I'm sure that one of the grey neoliberal blobs that you had that got their asses kicked for the last decade would be doing great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that argument will get much less purchase than it would have a year ago, you know, and maybe part of figuring out where we are is like, well, to what extent do we think that's progress?
I mean, I think Matt is right, and I think the reason, you know, people, probably our listeners to the show, as I mentioned earlier, are so into this election, and as Matt has alluded to, this really is the test case for, like, what, like, an actual social democratic or really, like, left-leaning politics would look like in a country similar to America if you really gave it a chance, and, or if, you know, you really went for it. And I think the interesting thing to see is just how the forces arrayed against that seem to dismiss it outright, not just as bad politics, but as just laughable on its face. Like this idea that, like, you are so insane to, like, you know, like the idea that Jeremy Corbyn is on, like, just flatly can be dismissed as not serious at all.
Yeah, I think that's the, I mean, It's interesting to compare this to Bernie, and I know that lots of people in both countries will have problems with this comparison because there are lots of differences there. The way that the Bernie thing evolved, I don't know. You guys were there. I wasn't there. I have a sense in a way that Corbyn was seen as more impossible or more improbable.
Yes.
And he is more left-wing than Bernie.
Yeah, exactly. He's farther to the left than Sanders was on
Let's be clear. There are differences between Corbyn and Sanders. Like, for instance, Corbyn is much better because he does actually support the IRA and Hamas.
Well, yeah, and he has, like, that's another thing that is an argument in favor of having, like, a robust, full-spectrum left-wing argument is that it allows you, like, when the fucking Manchester bombing happened, Corbyn had a fucking critique that wasn't, like, rolling up into a ball and absorbing, you know, a bunch of brickbats from the national security shitheads, is to say, like, this was something that was this sort of result, this is a result of our foreign policy. In the case of the Manchester bomber, literally, in the sense that the guy who did its family was, like, on the fucking, was in the extremist militias that the British government fucking funded when they overthrew Gaddafi. And it's like literal blowback. And you can point that out as opposed to the Bernie idea, which is just to sort of panic and screech about the fucking King of Jordan until they, like, stop asking you questions about it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's interesting because I think in America, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, what Ben Rhodes, who worked for Obama, infamously called the blob, right. is way bigger, you know, like the kind of like the British like security foreign policy kind of establishment like is less influential than in America.
It's chump change comparatively. Like in terms of the money in the defense sector, it's like adorable watching you like those guys like polish their Trident submarines. It's like, oh, that's adorable.
Exactly.
You got your little Trident submarines.
But I mean, like to my earlier point, like the way, like it's just interesting the way like Corbyn has been received and largely dismissed as laughable on his face, which is just funny to me as an outside observer of British politics, because it seems to me like the people opposing him are among the weirdest grotesques in any politics anywhere in the world. Like, talk about laughable on its face. I mean, Jesus Christ, look at some of these people.
Or like a sack of cottage cheese with glasses.
Jeremy Corbyn looks like a normal person. Like, he just looks like a normal, like, old guy who actually looks in pretty good health. Like, the people opposing him, I just keep thinking of that Iannucci line from The Thick of It, where the guy who ends up working for the Lib Dems finally freaks out that he's just sick of them working with the Tories.
Glenn.
And he calls them a bunch of born-to-rule, six-toed pony fuckers.
And Peter, it's been dreadful. I hope your cock falls off. Phil, do you know what you are? You're like an 8-year-old trapped in a 12-year-old's body.
This is great. Why is no one filming this?
Fuck you all up the wrong one. Ta-ta! Bye-bye!
That was better than IMAX Inception.
You've got to see. I mean, it's like, I shouldn't pick on one... there are too many people to pick on, but I don't know if you guys are familiar with Tim Stanley.
I am not, but I'll look him up shortly.
He's a columnist for The Telegraph. He's famous for a tweet where he says that he's like, oh man, I can't stand England. You go to all this trouble to wear a bow tie and builders just laugh at you.
Did you see the guy?
But this guy, he had a column today that was like, you know, British history made us nice, but terror teaches us we have to be nasty.
British history is the least nice history.
What history have you been in, man?
The history of the British Empire is the least nice history in the world. England was never fucking nice, ever.
Don't you remember the Amritsar massacre when they made delightful tea services for all of those protesting Indians?
Okay, one other thing. Jonathan, did you see this guy? I'll have to look it up. I don't have it right in front of me, but he's a Tory that's running for parliament. He tweeted one of his posters had been defaced, and he tweeted the poster, and he was like, this is the rabble that Corbyn has, you know, roused, like simply unacceptable. And it was just somebody had written like twat over his over his poster. No, they spray painted a cock on his face and changed conservative to cuntservative. And there's just something so British to me about not just like complaining about it, but taking a photo of it and sharing it with everyone.
Well, I think, Will, you pointed out it was a mirror to the cockpit Partridge.
It is the exact joke from I'm Alan Partridge. Yeah.
Iannucci rules everything around us.
The problem is I've got some rude daubings on the side of my car.
Can you still drive the car?
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, that's... Do you know what it says on the side of my car?
Tosser?
You're in the right ballpark. It actually says cock piss Partridge.
Well, we were trying to get the article to talk about, but it was behind some paywall. But like the headline was like, "What to do if your lad comes out as a Corbynista?"
Yeah.
Oh my god! That is Alison Pearson.
Yes.
Who is one of the more bonkers kind of like posh mummy Telegraph.
Do you have a subscription
columnist.
To?
I don't have a subscription to The Telegraph. She was like, the thing I really remember about her was that when the Paris attacks happened, she was like,
oh boy.
And these people want us to stay in the EU. Don't they know Brussels is the capital of terrorism? But I like this idea because you also see there's a guy here called David Goodhart who
funny.
Has kind of done a kind of like, he's like a London guy, but he's done a kind of hillbilly elegy kind of thing.
Ah.
And
Lullaby for Chavs.
Yeah, his thing is like, you know, his famous thing actually is talking about how we should refer to white self-interest rather than racism.
Oh, okay.
But he has written about how his own children think he's a racist. which I feel like it's like, that's fucking karma, man.
I was really close to subscribing to the Telegraph, but we already forked out for the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah,
this
so
week.
We could read Ben Ass's terrible piece about how to make sure your kid becomes as big an asshole as you are. But just real quick, I'm looking at Theresa May's Twitter account right now, and one of the things she just quoted posted a video of her saying, she says, "I'm clear. If human rights laws get in the way of tackling extremism and terrorism, we will change those laws to keep the British people safe." There you go. All I can think about is,
great.
We're going to kill your da! We're going to kill your da!
I just want to say one thing at the end here. There's plenty of reason to be incredibly pessimistic about this coming election. We live in the hell world. We all need to remember that. We live in just a endless nightmare realm where the worst thing you can imagine happening will happen sooner rather than later. So the likelihood of this being a crushing disappointment is very high. But if we were to apply the Bill Mitchell electoral analysis rubric to the British election, there's no question that Corbyn is winning. Because remember, it was Bill Mitchell who said polls don't matter. What you should look at is social media engagement and crowd size. And by those metrics, Corbyn is crushing it. And by God, if Bill Mitchell is our dad, then why can't he be what's a British term for dad?
Da. I don't know. He's our da.
He's our da.
Da? I don't know. I've never said that.
And
really.
we're gonna hold you in detention and threaten to kill him as they do under Theresa May's new security laws. But despite what Matt said, last question to you, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Is that boy going to do it? Is he about to do it?
You know, what I should say here is, here we
fucking go.
So yeah, that's all I've got.
Hey, we're putting this out tonight. Elections on Thursday. You know what? Anything can happen. Maybe something good can happen. You know,
for once in history.
For once,
a change. You know, just as a change of pace, if nothing else.
Jonathan Shannon of The Guardian, thank you so much for filling us in on all events across the pond.
Oh, it's my pleasure, my lords.
You're right, mental, mate.
This government's run this country into the ground. This used to be a green and pleasant land. Now it's the colour of the fucking BBC weather map. It looks like anemic dog shit.
JB, Carl Richards, and their hordes of fucking robots. They're coming over the hill towards us. And all you have got to do is this. Bend down, pick up any fucking weapon you can and twat the fuckery out of them.
This government is maimed, but it can't be shamed. It will be fucked.
Let's get out there and let's fucking kill them. Let's set fire to tears. Let's go. Yes. Come on. Let's go. Yes.
Okay, let's get going.
What do we do?
What do I call for an outside line?
It's great, isn't it?
What do we do?
Is it 9? Because that's where it is everywhere else.